Hello, it's Peter Wright and Kathleen Beauvais with another episode of the Yakking Show. And this is the Harmony Your Path to Wholeness channel of our two channels. This is where we bring you interesting and expert guests to help you with tips and ideas for leading a healthy and sustainable life and to prepare you for the interesting times this world seems to be heading into. Today's guests will be no exception. But first, let's say hello to co-host Kathleen. Hi, Kathleen. Good to see you again. How are you doing today?
Great to see you too, Peter. And thank you so much. I'm doing great. And thank you also very much for tuning into our show. We so appreciate having you. And as Peter mentioned, we do have another special guest with us today. We want to welcome Casey Gray to our show. Hello, Casey. How are you?
I'm doing very good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Now, Casey is the founder and owner of The Conscious Builder. This is a home construction and renovation company. He is the host of the Conscious Builder podcast and the Conscious Builder show on YouTube. The mission of this company is to be the world's most trusted source for healthy, comfortable, and efficient homes. So let's just jump right in. Casey, why do you call yourself the Conscious Builder?
Yeah, that came from actually I was inspired by my son when we found out we were going to have a son. Is once you realize that you're going to have to live by example and show somebody what to do and you want the best for them, then your mindset starts to change and how you approach life changes. And the word conscious really stuck out to my wife and I. We started doing quite a few things around that. But consciousness to us is, well, if you look it up in the dictionary, it's really just a state of awareness. And when I looked at what I was doing, carpentry, building homes, renovations, additions, like, all right, how can we bring more awareness to that? And that's really what it is, right? So what we do is custom. We're not going to say do this or do that. This is the only way to do it. It's really a matter of educating, right? So here's the options. You choose as the homeowner what's best for you and your family, because there's so many factors, right? If we all had, deep pockets and unlimited money, then we would make different choices. But at the end of the day, we have to make choices based on the resources that we have, the location where we live, whatever it may be, right? And the way I see it is bringing that consciousness to people so that they can make better choices for them. Because most people don't know, right? Very few people go through multiple renovations or build homes multiple times in their life. So we just want to make sure that they have what they need to make those decisions.
Excellent.
Okay, interesting. So here's one for you. On your website, you have, to my mind, a refreshingly short mission statement. And it to me, it's unusual for most businesses because most businesses take up half a page of saying something that doesn't mean very much, but yours is really good. And you display your three core values. So, and that's, I think it's even more unusual in the construction industry, right? So tell us about your three core values and why you chose to display those right up front on the website.
Yeah, those core values ultimately are my values that I've instilled, that we're working on, and actually a conversation that we'll be talking about with the team, because we want to, as we're getting growing and putting systems and processes, it's important that everybody's on board. So they might change as a business, but for myself, it's the way it is right now. It's honor, fun, and mastery. The way I look at it is another word for honor would be respect, but that's like, honor yourself. So take care of yourself, your body, take care of this temple that we have. Honor people around you, honor the environment. Those are, all fall under the same thing. Fun is just, most situations, a lot of situations in life aren't fun, but fun can be brought into any situation. It's a choice.
Sure.
Wait, we can choose to have fun or not. We can choose to be in a bad mood or not. There's a lot of people going through a lot of difficulties, and you would never know it, right? Because they chose to be joyful or bring peace or whatever it may be. And mastery is really about just being better than we were, right? It's not about perfection. Perfection's impossible. The only perfect person who was ever on this earth is Jesus, and we're not expected to be perfect, right? But ultimately, we want, I believe that we should be doing better, right? Once we know something, we should be working towards being better than we were yesterday. That doesn't mean that we're not going to slip and slide and
Sure.
and that's what it comes down to. So that those are things that I like to live by. I would say the hardest one is the fun, especially when you're in business. There's a lot of things that happen and you're like, don't want to deal with. But yeah, to be transparent and honest, it's not like it's in everything. It's a constant work.
That's right. But you know, even those bad things, as I've found, and I've had enough of them in my life, even if you can't make or get fun out of them, you can at least accept them for what they are and not that it's the end of the world, right? And move on,
Yeah,
sort of thing. So no, I liked it.
exactly.
That,
Yeah, I
well
do
done. Thank
too.
you for that. That's good.
So Casey, what's involved in building a healthy home?
Well, the way we'll look at it this way. So, building, as we know a lot more about building science now than we did 30 years ago, 20 years ago, even, right?
Sure.
And that's the thing about science. I find a lot of people put all of their trust in science, but science changes as the information and the data changes, right? Science, by its definition, is kind of like we're experimenting a lot of the times. So we don't know what works and what doesn't work. But once we figure out what works, then we know it to be true at that point, at least based on the information or whatever we can measure. And what we've come to realize is that there is a good way, there are certain fundamentals to building science that works no matter where you are in the world. And the way I look at it, to simplify it, is you have to look at your home as if you look at how your body operates to some extent. So first thing would be to breathe, right? And if I were to ask you, does your home need to breathe? What would you say?
I would say it does. It does. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, I want to bring in some fresh air into the home. So I want, yeah.
And that's totally true. That's the correct answer. Your home does need to breathe. However, it doesn't need to breathe the way most people believe. So a lot of people say, "Oh, I have a leaky house, so it's breathing." That's kind of like saying you're breathing through your skin, right? Ideally, we want to breathe through our lungs. So we want to control the air that comes in, take in the air, and get rid of the air that after, right? So we kind of breathe in the good stuff, get rid of the bad stuff. We're not always breathing in good stuff, but anyways. You breathe in through your nose hairs filter what needs to be filtered, things in your body clean it, and then you get rid of the bad stuff. That's how we want our house to breathe. So we want to come in through what's called, it's either an ERV or an HRV, which is are essentially fresh air systems. It would be how I think the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, describes them that way. And it gets preconditioned, right? So that means that the air that is leaving the home is preconditioning the air that's coming into the home. So it's the only energy you're using is to run that fan. There's not like a coil, a heating coil or a cooling coil or whatever, depending on where you live. It's just preconditioning, but the air doesn't mix. So the fresh air comes in, gets filtered, gets preconditioned by the air leaving the house, and it runs 24/7, 365. You always want fresh air coming into your house. So now, since we don't want to breathe through our skin, i.e., the envelopes of the walls, the roof, the foundation, that sort of thing, you want to make your home as airtight as possible, but you want it to be able to sweat. So that means like perspiring, right? So think of, for example, so we're not breathing through our skin, we're sweating through our skin. That's a good thing. You don't want to block sweat from coming out. But so you want that same thing to happen in your walls. You want to block the air from coming in. But if there's moisture in your walls, you want it to be able to dry. You don't want to trap that moisture in there because that's going to create all sorts of mold problems, indoor air quality issues, and so forth. So there are products and ways to build that allow that to happen. So think of wearing a big jacket in the middle of the winter. You're talking, you had freezing rain today. So imagine going outside if it's rainy and cold and windy, and you go outside with a big down warm jacket, but you have the zipper open. Doesn't really work very well, right? And they would even work less. It would be working worse than just going out with a really thin jacket that you had zipped up.
Zipped up, correct.
Right. So that's the importance of making your home airtight. Because if you don't make your home airtight and you have a really windy day, all of that air, or you have pressure, like for example, warm air goes to cold air. So if there's a pressure difference, that air is just going to be flowing out of your house. And that means that if it's minus 25 degrees Celsius, I know you're probably in the US, right? So I don't know what that is, Fahrenheit, it's cold. If you have air leaving your home through the walls and the assembly, whatever the temperature is of the air outside, that's coming into your house. So that's kind of the most important things. And we can get into like making sure that windows are done properly and you're making use of those things. But I think ultimately it comes down to making sure the envelope is done properly and then you're bringing in fresh air. Sorry
Yeah,
about
no
that. You
problem.
might come back scratching, but
No,
so
no worry.
On that note, I still have a question concerning the building of a healthy home. And having built a few brand new homes, I'm well aware of outgassing by, you know, the materials. You walk into a new home, you can smell that new home smell, just like new car smell, right?
Yeah.
But you can really smell that. So is there any building materials that you would suggest that minimizes that outgassing? I know carpets outgas. Yeah. You've got, you know, can you?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's one aspect of it. So I'll share a bit about that. But I think what's the bigger concern on that would actually be the products that are brought in after the home is built.
Oh,
it's all the furniture and rugs and stuff and chairs and clothing, even all the stuff that comes in after the fact is usually more detrimental to indoor air quality than the building materials themselves. Cause there's only so many materials that go into a new house, right? Mm-hmm. You're talking that where the off gassing is going to come is from the flooring potentially, right? Mm-hmm. Carpet's one of the worst culprits unless you
Absolutely.
Get a proper carpet. And then there is certain insulation, but that usually gets put into a wall. So it's not as mm-hmm. bad, but you know, that's why we recommend a product like Rockwool, which is made from rock, right? And slag. So that's naturally fire resistant and it doesn't grow mold and it doesn't lose its R value if it gets wet, right? So products like that will help you in the long run. It's kind of like an insurance, in my opinion, it's an insurance policy that you pay for once and you never have to worry about it. So that's, we just have to assume that moisture will get into our wall somehow at some point. Even if you do the house really well, a mouse may chew a hole through something and then you have mm-hmm. leakage and moisture gets in. The other thing would be like looking at your cabinetry, anything that's made with wood that has glue in it that could potentially have formaldehyde in it, anything that has a finish is going to have some off gassing. Now there's a big you know, when you go somewhere, it's everything's about VOCs. There's mm-hmm. a good, I don't know as much. You mentioned that at a podcast. We've actually put the podcast on hold, but all of our episodes are still there just because we're focusing on some other things right now. But I did do a really interesting interview with a person named Andy Pace, and he talks about VOCs and how VOCs mm-hmm. initially were an issue because they created smog, but only under certain conditions. Mm-hmm. And that's why they got rid of VOCs originally. But by themselves, they're not necessarily that bad for our health, according to Andy Pace. But what ended up happening is that once the paint companies, for example, had to get rid of VOCs, they started adding in all sorts of other chemicals to figure out how to have the same effect that the VOCs mm-hmm. had on the finish. And all those chemicals that they added weren't regulated. Because there's literally
hundreds
of new chemicals created every single year that aren't regulated, that they can't keep up. Right. And those are the things that are hard. You know, it's, you have to be careful with greenwashing ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. Cause, yep. And that's why you have to do a lot of research. And that's why we try to do what we do. We don't pretend to know everything. I like to have these conversations with people so that we can learn more. At least have, you know, like Henry Ford, you know, he doesn't need to know everything. He just pushes a button on his desk that gets him the person who knows what he needs to know at that point. Right. That's kind of what it comes down to. I'm not going to pretend that we know everything, but I probably know a person who knows the answer you're looking for.
Right.
But that is one example of something to be concerned. So if somebody's really concerned about indoor air quality and bringing chemicals, looking into things like your curtains, your furniture, the finishes that's on anything, carpet, avoiding that at all costs, and ultimately managing mold, right? Moisture within your house. Right. Those are going to be big things.
Right.
Okay.
Mold, especially black mold can be really bad for us.
Right.
Yeah. Not good at all. So you talk about, on your website, you talk about net zero and passive home construction. So tell our audience a little bit about those two terms.
Yeah. So passive house certification, not to be confused with a passive solar home. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you a passive solar home is something that came out and it's really about using the sun to kind of heat your home if you need heating. That is an element of getting a certified passive home, but not necessarily a requirement. One thing that I've learned after building our own certified passive home and trying things out is that if you want to rely on the sun for heat, for example, it's really great when you need it. But if you don't need it, or you want to turn it off because your house has now hit the temperature that you're comfortable with, you can't necessarily do that, right? The sun's on or off, and you can block it at certain times of year and let it in at other times. But unless you're doing like exterior blinds, it's really hard to control the sun. So it's not really, it's not necessarily comfortable to rely on the sun to passively heat your house. A passive, going through certification, is really one of the most rigorous building standards in the world. And the requirements will really change in terms of what you, when I say requirements, you know, the amount of insulation maybe that you need to do is going to change depending on where you build in the world.
Sure.
Because if you're in a warmer climate or more temperate climate, you're not going to need as much as what we need up in Ottawa, Ontario. But it ultimately comes down to how much energy you use. Like a certified passive house in California is almost minimum building code for what we have to do now in Ottawa, Ontario. It's not really that extreme. So it's really easy to get that certification there. It's also expensive though, and there's not really value in the market, at least where we are yet. But it is a good standard. You know, it really focuses on making sure that the house is extremely airtight. It measures air changes. If you're familiar with it, it needs to be a 0.6 air changes per hour or less. Not going to get into all that, but you know, those are blower door tests that, you know, energy advisors will figure this out. Now net zero is a new standard that's been brought by CHBA, which is a Canadian Home Builders Association. There's a lot of, I don't know what's in the US necessarily, but the idea behind a net zero energy home is that the home is produces as much energy as it consumes.
Okay.
So that, I like this. This is, I've kind of been saying this for years. I said, I never thought passive house was going to be the end all be all because of how difficult it is in certain areas to obtain. It's kind of overkill to some extent. I always said, well, solar panels are going to get to a point where they're so efficient that you could put them on, you know, a 100-year-old house and it's going to offset the energy, which it probably will at some point. Now, that doesn't solve the health concern that we were talking about.
Sure.
It'll help you with your energy, but it's not going to make your home healthier or more comfortable necessarily. Right. It'll just reduce your bills in the long run, which makes a lot of sense. There's some great incentives, by the way, for solar panels. Anyone in the US, we can help, and I can help on that front if you're interested on a solar panel. But there is some great incentives in the US right now that makes a lot of sense for people. So that's really the difference now. Net zero, the certification does have some, it does focus on making sure that you have a certain amount of insulation and that you hit a certain air change per hour. So they do have both in that. So I lean towards that certification because it's not very difficult to get to from where we are as minimum building code where we are.
Okay.
And we're up in Canada. It's colder. We're not like US. You kind of have both, if across US, you have both extremes.
Sure.
Across Canada, we have different climate zones, but all of our climate zones have winter and summer, right? So we're not going to be somewhere where it's just like maintains a fairly even temperature throughout the year.
Right.
Yeah. Can I jump in with another quick one? Casey, I lived most of my life in Africa, and we had a number of more commercial and domestic units which used various forms of organic matter to produce methane to then either run generators or cooling or heating plants. I've not come across any sort of waste product methane generator in Canada. Maybe I've missed it. Is that because it's too cold and the energy we need to put into it to make it react is more than it's going to produce, or is there another reason?
That's a good question. It's not something I've looked into, to be honest. I know the only ones I've seen are like these big fart bags, essentially. It's kind of what they call them, right? So I don't know why. I know where we are, like in Ottawa, we're lucky in the sense that there's a lot of hydro dams.
Sure.
So a lot of the electricity is made through water.
Yeah.
And then solar is also kind of being pushed on some, there's some benefits or some savings cost, grants on that as well. But that is not something I've looked into, so I couldn't tell you why or why not it's being used in certain areas.
Yeah, because some of them are quite efficient. Dairy farms over there in Africa, because they get lots of slurry, and pig farms, they put it into digesters, and some of them even run vehicles on methane that they produce from their waste. And there's smaller household units. And even in Scandinavia, there's a couple of household units where they use human waste to generate methane to augment their fuel for cooking, for instance. So I just wondered if there was any other reason. Anyway, sorry.
There's a lot of there's a lot of farms where we are when you go to the outskirts. So
yeah,
it's a good question. Something I should look into and figure out.
Yeah, I tell you, there's money there.
So Casey, is your system for building homes more costly than conventional building systems?
Well, what we do is custom. So by default, it's more expensive, right? So if you're trying to compare it to another, like your typical builder grade home where, you know, you're buying the land and the home that they've built 1,000 of them already, it's going to be more expensive, whether you apply what we're talking about or not. Mm-hmm. Now, building a home the way I'm describing, like a net zero home, isn't necessarily more expensive. It depends on what your base case is. Like I could build you a really energy efficient home for less than just a high end home, right? If they decide to put a copper roof on or a slate roof on, for example, and masonry on the outside and, you know, spend, you know, $200,000 on their kitchen, like those are all things that have nothing to do with the performance of a home,
sure,
but cost more, right? So it kind of comes down to what are we comparing the baseline from? So what I will say is where you will spend more money when you're building a home that I'm describing, whether it's a net zero passive house, is you're going to spend more on your envelope, which is really more insulation, mm-hmm. more attention to detail for air sealing, and maybe more on windows, but not necessarily depending on what type of window you want, right? Because I can get you a window that performs better from one manufacturer, but still might be cheaper than a nicer looking window from another manufacturer, like a high-end manufacturer, right? So, and then if you wanted to go fossil fuel free, like with air, usually it's an air source heat pump at some point because they've come down quite a bit in cost, but they're still more than your typical natural gas furnace, but it's not a must for this certification. Mm-hmm. I would recommend it. To me, if you build a home, even if you, you know, whether you believe in the CO2 affecting the environment or not, I think building a home that is not reliant on natural gas mm-hmm. is future-proofing your home, because you mm-hmm. can build a fossil fuel-free, so a fully electric home, even in our climate where we have extreme heat and extreme cold, both sides, put solar panels on it, and you could be, to some extent, self-reliant. You don't. It's more expensive to go off-grid because of batteries, and battery technology is not there yet. But by future-proofing your home, you can offset all of your electricity. You'll never be able to offset your natural gas. Even though natural gas is cheaper to operate right now, you won't be able to produce more natural gas and put it back into the ground, but you can produce electricity and put it back into the grid. So right. that, to me, is what makes sense.
Right. Okay.
Interesting. Given, going on a slightly different track here, but one that concerns me, particularly in Canada, given the shortage of available land, other than carving up farmland, and the huge, with the immigration that's going on, the demand for housing, do you think that for many people, a single family home will be a dream that they're never going to achieve?
Yeah, it's, I guess, somewhat of a loaded question in that to go. I think it's a good question. It's definitely getting expensive. I don't think it's because of a shortage of land. I would say it's because the value of our dollar has gone down by 99%. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's kind of, in my mind, somewhat of a political question that I talk to a lot of people. I'm not going to be the expert, but I have friends that I trust in that world that I have conversations with all the time and be like, hey, I can tell you how to build a house. What's going on with the dollar? You know, what are we preparing for? And, you know, if everything's going up in cost, right? Even as a business, it's getting tougher. We're feeling it right now because people don't have as much money as they thought they had because interest rates have gone up. We've had to increase our labor because living expenses have gone up. So we have to pay our employees more. Our expenses have gone up, so we need to make more. So all of these things are affecting every single business, everybody, right? To some extent.
Right.
And I don't think there's lots of land in Canada. There is no shortage of land in Canada, I can guarantee you that. And most of the land is farmland, like you said, but a lot of that farmland is used to feed animals.
Yeah. Right? So, no, true. And me coming from Africa, I look at the vast, I mean, Canada's the second biggest land area, country in the world by land area after Russia, right? But most of the land that's not used for farming is where people don't want to live, up in the shield,
Oh,
right?
that's right. It's
That seems to be
uninhabitable.
the problem.
Yeah.
I just get concerned, you know, whether the crops grown on farms are used for animals or direct for humans is a different argument. Where I live in the little city of Woodstock in Ontario, I've been here 20 years since coming from Africa, and there's 5,000 acres have been taken out of farming for the Toyota plant, that was one, and new subdivisions. And it's pushed our farmland up to over $20,000 an acre, right? So where does that stop? That's what the background to the question that I asked you.
Yeah, and the question is like it becomes more expensive, but the value of our dollar's gone down, so we can't buy as much, right? So
sure.
When I speak to the economists that, you know, that I know that study this stuff, they say houses aren't worth what they are selling for. It's right. Just that the dollar can't buy it anymore. So that's the trickier is when you look at those things is when you compare it to the I saw an interesting post recently, and you know, this like this is not my expertise by any means, I'm just sharing what's kind mm-hmm. of I've seen, and then I fact checked it with the people that I know and sense, hey, is this true, studied, who's gone to school, has a master's in this, and the post was really relating what people make today compared to at the height of the depression. So if you look at it at the height of the depression, mm-hmm. and you know what the value of the dollar was then, and you compare it to today and compare it to what people make, they're actually making less money than they did at the height of the depression, and things mm-hmm. are costing more, is essentially what the post. They looked at the value of a house, they looked at the average income per person. So the average income back then in today's dollars was over $80,000. Now it's like 56. This is in the US. Right. And the average price of I can't remember all the numbers, but the price of a house was more in today's dollar versus what today. So those are all the things, right? And that's putting the pressure, hence why two parents need to work, hence why, you know, it's all those things. So I wouldn't say.
I agree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we're just pricing things based on what our dollar can buy at this point. And
right.
Everyone's trying to make a dollar and get by, which.
Goodbye. Sure.
I think small towns, on that note, you know, ever since pandemic and everything that's been going on, I think smaller towns are going to do better and better like they did, you know, mm-hmm. 60, 70 years ago, because people are going to start relying on their community,
right?
Yep. More and trying to support each other, hopefully. Right. And we'll see what happens. But
that's sure. We were seeing people we talked to on the show, and mm-hmm. just generally we're seeing a number of small towns thriving because of that, because people right. realize they didn't have to commute long distances anymore, those of us who are lucky to work from home. So why not live in a smaller town with a better quality of life and cheaper housing than in a big city? Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Thanks for that. Back to you, Kathleen.
All right. So do you consult with other builders around the world to help them build more sustainable homes?
I've spoken with some people. I've had people reach out to us. Not too many. Well, I guess on the social media side, yeah, people do reach out and ask questions. We can usually tell that they're built, whether they're a builder or a homeowner. There are a lot of builders there. And I'm a part of a group where we're kind of in non-competing areas now, that we're sharing not just how to build better, but how to build better businesses as right. well, right? In this realm. So I'm happy to talk with anybody who wants to discuss this stuff and, you know, share what knowledge I have from building in the climate that we know.
So if we were interested in building a home, if anybody out there is interested in building a home and building a custom home, and they have a builder in mind, you would probably recommend having a chat with you as a consultant to find out the best way to go about building a healthy home. And then going back to the builder and saying, can you incorporate all of these measures into what we're going to do together?
I've consulted on a couple of things, right? It depends on what they're looking for. If you can find mm-hmm. a builder who knows what they're doing, then great. If they don't know and the homeowner is willing to take on the expense, right. they can hire us as a consultant and work with that builder to help work through the details and advise based on our experience.
Right.
But that doesn't happen too often because, like I said, custom ends up being more expensive. Mm-hmm. A lot of people reach out thinking that it's cheaper to build custom, but it's not. If it was, then more people would do it. Right. Sure. So there's just a lot of costs before you even stick a shovel in the ground that people aren't necessarily aware of. And that's what really blows a budget. And speaking of costs, actually, one thing too, Peter, that might, you know, that does push the some prices of construction up, not necessarily prices of land, is the increase in fees and permitting and everything that seems to be happening everywhere, right? And just to build a house on an empty lot in Ottawa, like you're 30 to 40 grand in a development charge, right? You want to build a house on that land, you got to pay us to do that. You know, that's what the city says, which is crazy.
I've been looking into that very thing in a little town. I live on a farm. So in the township we're in, I attend some of the council meetings because a group of us are very concerned about the way that's going with these fees. Quite crazy. But the one good thing that's coming up in our part of in our county, the townships are approving, I've forgotten the three-letter word for it, where they're approving secondary residences on the same property if it complies with certain, and same where you are, Kathleen, as well. So that's coming in, which makes it easier now to put up a small unit in your backyard for your married son and daughter, or daughter and son, or whatever, or your elderly parents. So I think is that pretty widespread, Casey?
I think that's across Ontario. But I know like in Ottawa, like you can put a secondary unit anywhere. They can't stop you now from doing that. Now doing those coach houses it's not necessarily cheap, and it's not easy to do. It's cheaper than buying land and building another house, right?
Sure.
So it is, but from a cost per square foot, that's usually more than what people think it's going to be as well. Partly because of our climate, right? If you were somewhere warm, you see these tiny houses sort of thing. You build your house and roll it in on a trailer and stick it on some piers and you're good. You can't do that where we live because it's too cold, right? You can't get the plumbing and everything there that you need to do. So you need to do a full foundation. You need to get below frost. So it makes it a little bit trickier in our climate, but it's possible. 100%.
Yeah. And accessibility is difficult the way some of these older plots are laid out, right? You've got a very, very narrow driveway and you're trying to get a great big cement rig down there. It could be a crane. We're running over time. So you better back to you, Kathleen, to ask.
You have a burning question, or should we just, do you want to ask?
We mentioned it. Casey, this is one that comes from our business channel, but I like to ask it of people like yourselves who are experts in their own right and highly successful. With all the people you've met in business and out of business, is there one characteristic or mindset or habit that sets successful business leaders apart from those that remain average, or is it more complicated?
It almost honestly comes down to psychology. Mindset. That can be described. I'm sure it comes up on your show a lot. And where you get that, if I'm speaking from my own experience, to me that's what it wasn't before, but now it's really the Bible as I study more and more of that, which helps with my mindset and knowing that I really can't do it alone. I need some sort I need that support, and for me now in my belief that's Jesus. Before it was, I didn't know what I was looking for, but I knew I was looking for something. But ultimately that's the biggest thing, because I think our world is set up where we need to be independent. You need to know how to do it. It's all you figure it out, be courageous, all this stuff. And that's not what's taught. I went through life thinking that there was no, guide, no owner's manual to life, because I didn't grow up with it. And for me, that was a lie. To me, that's the Bible. And the more I study it, the more I realize everything that's happening right now and everything that you go through in life is already described, and it's right there. There's 66 authors or something. They've described it. And we just need to put some time into it and study and learn it and do our best to live that way. And it's easier said than done, kind of like I said at the beginning of this. But that's been a huge help for me for me, it's been only 2 years where I finally dove into that and really committed, it's been life changing to say the least.
Excellent.
Good. Okay. No, I agree with you. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you, Kathy. How do people contact you?
There's a few ways, but if we're talking conscious builder and building, and the best thing is to go to our website, theconsciousbuilder.com. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to reach out to me directly, I have my own website, just caseygray.com as well.
Okay.
Those are really the two places. You can go from
Excellent.
There.
Great. And for our audio listeners, those details will be in the description on whatever platform you are listening to this on.
And one more thing, sorry, just to add to that, if somebody yes. is listening and they want to learn just about building better homes,
yes.
Our YouTube channel, that's where we put all of our content now. YouTube. We have
right.
hundreds of videos up there now. So if you just go on YouTube and search a conscious builder, we'll pop up and you'll find a ton of information there.
Excellent. We'll put that in there too. Good. And last quick reminder for me, for our listeners and viewers, you've seen another really interesting guest today. To make sure you don't miss out on our future guests, hop onto our website. You'll find a form to sign up for our newsletter, one email a week. That's all we send you. And then you'll know who's coming up this week and next week for as long as you want to keep watching. And that's it for me. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you, Casey. Back to Kathleen.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Casey. It's been valuable information. Thank you. And thank you also very much for tuning into our show. If anyone is interested in being a guest on our show, we invite you to visit us at theyakkingshow.com. All you need to do is click on the contacts tab where you will find a short application form, and we would love to hear from you. So until next time, take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.